Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, it's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. So the Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson was on for 29 years, and it's been 29 years this month since Johnny ended his reign as the King of Late Night. And to celebrate this milestone in television history and talk about the legend of the King of Late Night and behind the scenes, really cool behind the scenes stories of the Tonight Show, is one of the original producers and the president of Carson Entertainment and Johnny's nephew, Jeff Sotzing. Jeff, glad to have you back on the program. A little history on this Tonight Show, premiered back in 62, and Johnny took over after Jack Parr and a myriad guest hosts hit the stage.
Basically, there was a number of guest hosts because at the time he was the host of Who Do You Trust, a game show on ABC. Yeah, and they wouldn't let him out of his contract for 6 months, so they had to fill in for 6 months, which I think was good because by the time he got there, people were ready for something different, and he was a fresh face. It actually turned out to be fantastic for him.
There was a lot of anticipation and a lot of talk and a lot of media talk about Johnny taking over this show.
Well, and huge shoes to fill. Jack Parr was such an iconic figure. I mean, who's going to be able to replace Jack? So that was not an easy thing for him to do.
And I know he launched the show in New York, which now after watching a color clip of right. The Tonight Show, I see that Fallon uses a similar blue curtain that was behind Johnny those first years in New York, which maybe that's a little nod to him.
Well, and that show, the Fallon Show, was in the actual studio that Johnny was in when he was in New York between 62 and 72.
Wow. That's very cool.
Yeah, 6B. Yeah, it's very cool.
Now, the early episodes are a little more rare, but when I watch them now, even the 90-minute episodes, I got to tell you, and I know you know this, Johnny was a master at his craft and what he did, bouncing from 2 to 3 top celebrities of the day, comedians, politicians, musicians, authors, everyday people, sometimes all in the same show. When I sit there and I watch it and I think, boy, that's a long time to watch a show 90 minutes, I'm sad when it's over.
Well, that's great to hear. And it is easy. It is really, really difficult to do and make it look easy.
Yeah, I bet. Now, I know you worked with him for years. When did you start the relationship on air? Now, were you ever part of the New York days, or did that come, because you're a young guy, did that come in really when they moved to California?
No, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia. So, you know, like my earliest memories of The Tonight Show was in 1961, where one morning I woke up and there was this guy sleeping on our couch, and I said to my mom, "Who's that?" And she said, "That's your Uncle Dick from California. He's come out to the East Coast and he's going to direct The Tonight Show, and your Uncle John is going to be the host of The Tonight Show."
He's sleeping on the couch.
So that's a pretty good deal. One of my uncles is the host of The Tonight Show, and the other one is the director. And, you know, all through my junior high and high school, if I wanted to go and see The Temptations or Aretha Franklin, I'd jump on the train from Philadelphia and go to New York and sit in the audience and watch rehearsal. And you had to be 16 to see the show, so I couldn't see the show, but I could sit in the booth with Dick Carson. And I watched the show for years and years and years. And when it moved to the West Coast, I had actually gone into the service. And when I got out of the service, I moved to the West Coast, and I started in like 1978.
Now, how did that conversation go with your Uncle Johnny about this? Was this something that he knew you wanted to do and said, "Hey, Jeff, let's give this a shot. Why don't you come work on the show?" How did that all come about?
Well, you know, as I say, I loved the show as a kid, and I'd always go and watch rehearsal, and then after the show, we'd go backstage. Usually my dad would take me, or I'd go by myself when I got older and see Uncle John and, you know, talk about show business. And I had actually gone to Pasadena City College, and I was studying videotape editing. And, you know, we always had Christmas and Thanksgiving and, you know, barbecues, family get-togethers. And at Christmas, he said to me, "What are you doing?" And I told him that I had been studying to be a videotape editor, and I'd been there for a couple of years. And a few months later, he called my mom and said, "Do you think Jeff would want to work on The Tonight Show as the receptionist?" So my first job was, you know, sorting the mail, getting all the taking calls. And he said, "It'll be a great way for you to learn everybody, you'll know everybody's business, and, you know, you just do it for the summer." And I said, "Terrific." And I never left.
Wow. I mean, just think about that. I mean, this is, you know, your uncle, but one of the most powerful men on television. And it was at a time where, what do we have, three channels, four or five, maybe a couple UHF right. outlets. So right. everybody was watching the show. I mean, it's at its height, 15 million people, 18 million people watching the show every night?
Oh, more like 30.
30 million.
I mean, when we did, you know, my jobs that I had towards the end of my run was associate producer and producer with Peter LaSalle, and we put together the anniversary shows, and those were primetime compilation highlights from the past year. And if we didn't do 30, 40 share, we thought we were not doing very good at all.
That's amazing. That's amazing when you think about it today. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just completely different. And when I started the show, I made a deal with the producer, with Freddie, that he wouldn't tell anybody who I was. And basically, we did the show on Thanksgiving one year, and I was backstage watching Johnny go on through the curtain, and he turned to me and he said, "I'll see you in about an hour." And then he walked through the curtain, and everybody turned to me and said, "Why are you going to see Johnny in about an hour?"
You know, I like that, though, that you made that agreement, because, you know, you don't want that special treatment. You want to, and that says a lot about you. You want to work hard and be a producer and not come along for the ride because you're a family member. You want to work hard and earn your stripes. And that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, and I think it makes it easier to deal with the staff and the crew, because, you know, they know you've got a great deal and they know you're a privileged person. So I was grateful that Fred allowed me to do that, and Fred was probably hoping that I would have my summer job and then leave, and then I never left. So
what was if I may ask, a typical day at the Tonight Show? How would that roll?
It was a super well-oiled machine. So, you know, basically the writers were there early, and there was a group of writers who created the monologue. There was a group of writers who did what they called the desk spot. So that's like Karnak or little material reading spots they would do after the monologue. The writers would then put all the monologues together and bring them to the receptionist desk, which I was at the time, and I'd put them in an envelope and call a messenger, and a messenger would come to the Tonight Show and drive the monologues out to Johnny's house, if you can believe that. I mean, we didn't have a computer on the Tonight Show at all, even when we went off the air in 1992.
Is that right? Okay.
So, and then the talent coordinators and the rest of the production staff would come in around 10 o'clock, and they would have a booking meeting from between 10 and noon, and that's when they would book talent and make calls and figure out what the day would be like. And then there was a production meeting with the staff and the crew at noon. Everybody had lunch between noon and like 1, and there was rehearsal at 2 and band rehearsal at 3, and the show was started at 5:30 on the money. And when I first started, it was 90 minutes. So it was 5:30 to 7,
wow.
And then it was 5:30 to 6 after 1980, and it was, you know, it was live. You know, you couldn't stop. You didn't do any retakes. It was live, and it was really, really exciting.
That's why I think made that so show special, is because you taped it as if it was live. What time would Johnny get in?
He would get in at like 2:30, you know, 2 o'clock. Sometimes he'd come early, but most of the time he was, you know, if he had to do a sketch or if he had to come in and do some publicity work. But, you know, by the time I started on the show, it was already, you know, 15 years in. He was kind of done doing publicity, and
yeah,
he had it down. He knew what he was doing.
I bet he did. Well, and, you know, he was working from home, and I saw, and we'll talk about the museum exhibit in a little bit, but I saw some of the notes from the monologue that are on display. Is, you know, he'd get a ton of them, and he would mark number 1, number 2, number 3, make some changes, which is pretty cool. I mean, he was working from home, he's reading the papers, he's trying to keep up on things. You told me a story this week at an event that you once offered Johnny an opportunity because he was driving in traffic coming in from Malibu. And
right.
Sometimes it would take him, a couple hours. I mean, it was not pleasant, and California traffic's never pleasant. And you made him an offer. Please share that story.
Right, because, you know, and he drove himself to work, and this was towards the very end of his career when he was making a lot of money. And he had been caught in LA traffic during a storm, and it took him maybe 2 hours to get in, and he was not a happy camper. And I said, "Hey, you know, I'm a private pilot." He was a private pilot. I said, "Let me research what it would take to have a helicopter pick you up somewhere near your house in Malibu, and I know you can fly right to NBC because they have a KNBC news helicopter that sits out there all the time, so we have a landing pad, so let me figure it out. So sure enough, I figure it out. It's great, and I go to see him a couple of days later, and he says, did you find out about the helicopter? I said, yeah, it's incredible. It takes 15 minutes. They pick you up at like 1:45, 2 o'clock, you're here. You finish your show at, 6:30, 7 o'clock. They take you home. 7:15, you're home. It's great. And he says, well, what would that cost? And I said, it's $600 each way. And there was this long pause. And he looked at me and he said, Jeff, who would spend $600 or $1,200 to go to work every day? What kind of person does this? Oh, Jeff, come on. I mean, I'd heard about it for a month.
But you know what? He's a guy that was making $25 million probably a year, but that was the Midwest guy in him.
So Ed McMahon had a chauffeur, a limousine, and Johnny drove himself.
Yeah.
So.
That was funny. Did he have a pretty good... Yeah. I know Ed McMahon worked with him on Who Do You Trust on ABC and brought him over to The Tonight Show. What was the relationship like between the two of them? I know they were probably pretty close in the earlier days, but as time went on, did they just see each other on the show? Like, how did that dynamic work?
I think that they were much closer socially in the beginning, but, these guys worked together for 40-some years,
Yeah. So there was Ed McMahon, of course, and then Skitch Henderson was the music director until Doc came along. I met Doc this week, and he's 89. And my God, first of all, he looks fabulous, and he's even more fabulous in person. I mean, it was just such an honor to meet him. But what a great dynamic between these three guys for so many years on this show.
Yeah, it really clicked. I mean, Johnny and Skitch had a really good relationship too, but Doc had an even better relationship with Johnny and the crazy outfits that happened in the late 60s were just perfect fodder for him during the monologue. And, again, you think about the music that's involved in that show, it was just insane. You have to do the theme, and you have to do all the bumper music, and you have to do all the guests. I mean, it's a lot of work. The Tonight Show band, the Tonight Show Orchestra, they backed up everybody from, Pavarotti to ZZ Top. It was incredible.
It was fantastic. And I was watching Doc over by one of the speakers in the museum this past week, like just sitting there up close, listening to the music and just tapping his foot. It was pretty cool.
It was so funny. He says to me, Sean Compton from Antenna TV was so smart. He decided to have a compilation of all Doc's music playing in the background when we went up for the exhibit. And Doc says to me, hey, this music is really good. I said, it's you. Don't you realize? You go, oh, yeah, this is really good.
I would love to, and I know there's rights issues with everything, but, man, that would be great to throw out some music on a disc or on Apple iTunes or something with all of I know he's done a couple albums, but all that music, man, that he did is classic. Like, you'll never see an orchestra like that on television again, I don't think.
Well, no, and, people forget that in the 60s and 50s, CBS and ABC and NBC all had, their own orchestra. The Tonight Show Band is not the Tonight Show Band. It's Doc Severinsen and the NBC Orchestra. That's the title. And if you did a special like, Dean Martin did the Gold Diggers, or you did Hullabaloo, or you did Laugh-In, you hired the NBC Orchestra, and they were right there.
Really funny that. We had at this radio station for probably 30 years from the 1930s through the 60s, we had a WGN orchestra that would play on the air here. I mean, it's wild, but that every station had something like that, but not anymore. That's kind of something that's gone by.
Well, yeah, and then in the 70s, they got rid of everybody. ABC and CBS got rid of these guys, and yeah, I'm sure that NBC wanted to get rid of them, and Johnny said, no, that's my kind of music, and I love that, and we're going to keep the band. And, you talk to Doc, and he will tell you that was the greatest thing that ever happened to him, to have a gig for 30 years.
Yeah.
That is so regimented that he can go out and do weekend gigs, and even a lot of those guys play gigs at night, so that's a great deal.
People always ask if the Tonight Show theme, they played it live every single night. I know the video was taped and little shots of Johnny doing stuff always, and they changed over the years, but it was shot live every, they'd play that every day.
Everything was live, and there was all the performances were live. There was nothing done to track. No lip syncing, Zippo. Everything was live.
Well, more with president of Carson Entertainment, Jeff Satzing, on the legacy of his uncle, Johnny Carson, right after this on 720 WGN.
As you know, the San Diego Zoo is one of the finest zoos in the world, and we've had this young lady on the show very often the past, I guess, 7 or 8 years she's been appearing with
us. 9 years.
Hmm?
About 9 years.
Right, yeah. Several plus several would be about nine.
You said 7 or 8.
No, I said no, I didn't say 7 or 8. I said several.
Then you said 7 or 8, and I said nine.
Yes. Nine. Good, thank you.
Yeah. Some of the animals you had as babies are now 10 years old.
That would be about right.
Remember the animals that did something funny on your tie?
Yes.
Those little lions, the little baby lions, were 1 year old.
That's right.
They are now treacherous and ferocious 10-year-old animals.
Okay. Anyway, Joan Embry is here tonight.
And she's now 32.
That's right. Joan is an animal handler and a trainer. And you really think you're fooling everybody, don't you?
No.
And she
I'm
also...
I'm just here to do my best to help you.
I know that. And she does her 3 horse shows a day. Did you know that? At the animal park.
Boy.
What?
What an exciting idea.
Would you like an army cot or something? Maybe just to kind of catch up on a little nappy poo? Just might snap you out of it. Okay.
I love Joan. I'm the only one who went down to see Joan. Doc has never seen her. You've never seen her. I went to the wild animal farm.
It's all right. It's okay.
But you're upsetting me. You're upsetting
me. No, I don't upset you.
I went down, Joan, and I
know you did. That's all right.
Don't say... No.
What?
I know her. I went down and...
Oh, I know you did. I know you went down there. And
I held a baby gorilla.
I couldn't go with you that week. You held a baby gorilla. Good. All right.
That was a clip of The Tonight Show in 1977 with Johnny and Ed McMahon after Ed had a few too many cocktails at lunch. It's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. We're talking to one of Johnny's original producers, his nephew and president of Carson Entertainment, and that is Jeff Satzing. What guests did Johnny really look forward to having on the show? You know, I something that always was like a great experience, not only for him, but for the audience as well. Who did he enjoy having on?
He loved people who came on and were prepared. So Steve Martin would always come out and have a piece of material that would be dropped dead. You know, Bette Midler, you know, especially you look at the show from May 21st, 1992, she does these unbelievable numbers, just super, super prepared professional people. He really liked that. You know, Rodney Dangerfield, we'd ask him to come on the show, you know, twice a year. And he'd say, no, just once, because he wanted to be prepared. And he had his material that he would do center stage, and then he had his material that he would do at the panel. And, you know, Johnny just, you watch him with these guys, and you can see that he's just having a great time. And one of the things that he was so good at was helping direct these performers on there with their material. So he could set them up, and they all, you know, Joan Rivers would talk about how wonderful Johnny was at setting up a comedian. How hot was it? How's your health? Your health okay? Okay, good. Everything doing? You just set him up.
Well, he let people shine. I mean, it wasn't all about him. He let his guests shine. And if he really liked you, he really opened the door for you, and like, especially the comedians that were on that show.
Yeah, and man, he told me that Jack Benny had told him once that, you know, no matter what happens on the show, you're going to get the credit. So just make the show look good.
Well, more with president of Carson Entertainment, Jeff Satzing, on the legacy of his uncle, Johnny Carson, right after this on 720 WGN.
No, boo. Here's your boo.
Boo this.
Anyway, yeah, boo this. Now,
the worst place.
That's an Italian expression for how's the family.
John, I haven't been on with you for some time.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, well, you've been busy with other things.
That's...
And I heard the other party's story, and...
Well, done.
Well, I'm going to help her get all we can get. I only kid you, John, because,
so.
You know, your mother, your dad, your whole family, well, your father, rest his soul, he's gone, but your mother, you know, she did call me, and you're short again. I mean, $50 a week and working as a house cleaner is a little out of order. When you're a multimillionaire sitting out at Malibu with those 9-year-olds going, little girl.
Well, you do kind of regress. Yes. That's true.
Because we go back a lot of years.
Oh, do we ever?
We know each other. Right. I know Ed.
Slate Brothers?
Yeah. Ed I used to be very close with, but he got too big.
Yeah.
He sits around now with his wife, Victoria, going, we're bigger than Johnny.
He's got shows all over.
Star Search, Hunt Your Dog, Look for Your Monkey, Find Your Animal, Win a Weekend, 7 weeks in El Segundo, it's a whole thing. And he keeps telling me, isn't it a shame how Johnny's doing bad? I'm a friend. The guy knocks you.
Yeah.
Anyway, look at this. Tommy Newsom and the other guy, Doc Severson, went, we love you. We love you, Johnny. We'll do whatever you want. They're all busy going. Okay. No, I don't have to do that. No. That's why I haven't been on in a great deal of time.
That's right.
It's about 2 years since I started. I got the phone call and I started doing. I don't need you, Belch. I hope your beer truck blows up.
Let me ask you a question. Have you ever been close to breaking up?
My wife and I?
No, your dog and you. Of course you're a wife. Yes.
My dog and me.
Yes, Barbara.
Have I ever been close to breaking up? I'll be very honest. I was more sensible than you. You got married when you were 12. You got married when you were 8.
I was 20.
I'm exactly.
I was 25 the first time
Well, what did you know? You were out in Nebraska going strawberry shortcake, cockabay pie, V-I-C-T-O-L-L-A, Nebraska. What did you know?
Well, you
and
got
he was running around going, off we go into the wild blue yonder. He was a moron, too, and both of you have college educations. I never went to college. I married a wonderful Jewish girl that just lays there and says, Gucci, Gucci, Gucci.
Well, you got married very late in life.
Right.
Because
well, look at the way I look. But anyway, no, I got, because I knew, we both knew, no, I was in between marriages with you. Well, I was 38 before I got married.
Well, you didn't.
You knew
to,
that. You and didn't. I ran around. I was in heat for singers.
Ran around?
Well, singers always knocked me out. Right? But I knew it was over when I started carrying the music.
I saw some of those singers you had. Right?
Yeah. Well, I've seen some of the girls. You went in between marriages, and they weren't exactly, you know, I've seen you with a couple of moose. But in those days when you drank, you kept saying, you're gorgeous. No! I didn't go overboard with the other broad like some of my black brothers that go, yeah! You know.
Yeah.
Jews don't do that. They said, we'll start in a minute. I'm going to go get a paper. Anyway. And you Irish guys go, and Victoria, is it over? Anyway, so. No.
One of the guests that I can watch over and over again on YouTube, on the DVD collections that you sell from the archives, is Don Rickles. And I know it always looked like Johnny just didn't quite know what was coming from Don, because Don is kind of an open book when it comes to coming on the show and so forth. And I knew they knew each other for a long time, like from the days of Murray Franklin's and everything. That always was a treat, I think, when Don was on the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was performing in Las Vegas in the lounge, and you know, Johnny and Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin, all these guys that were the headliners, they would go see Rickles at, you know, at the lounge after they did their shows. I mean, that was the big deal. They loved to go see Rickles and maybe Louis Prima and Kelly Smith. I mean, all these guys, I mean, Keeley Smith, I mean, they'd love to see Rickles, and Johnny and Rickles were working together from like the 60s. So
yeah.
It's amazing that they did that for so long.
Now, I'm aware of one guest, because I've seen you talk about this before, that he had a little bit of a challenge with, and that was fellow NBC personality Bob Hope. There was a little bit of frustration, because I think Bob would just kind of call up and say, hey, I'm coming over to do the show. And I noticed this as a kid, Jeff, now, because you know, I was born in 67, so I missed a lot of the early years. But I remember when Bob would come on the show, there was just such a... You know, and he was Bob Hope. I completely understand that. I respect who he is as an actor, as a performer, as a comedian. But he always seemed like he was in a rush. He always seemed like he had some place to go afterwards. I noticed this as a kid, And I always noticed the clip packages he would bring about his specials looked like somebody taped them together and brought him into the studio. I knew that as a kid. I was like, what the hell is this? Am I right to say that? Was that Johnny's experience too with this?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, Bob Hope was the biggest star of radio, film, and television. And when Johnny was a kid, Bob Hope was a big star.
Yeah.
So because of that, and because of Bob Hope's relationship with NBC, he could head carte blanche. He could do whatever he wanted. He could come on whatever he wanted. And there was times when we had our show formatted and ready to go, and Bob wanted to come on tomorrow. Bob wants to promote his special tomorrow. And, okay, so you have to reschedule the whole show. You have to rework everything, and then we'd say make sure that the clip is no longer than 2 minutes, and the clip would be 5 minutes. And I think that frustrated him, but, you know, he had such, you know, admiration and respect for Bob Hope. But, you know, it just frustrated him more than anything else. It didn't really upset him, believe me. He was very upset when he passed away, too. That was awful.
I bet. Jeff, there are not many, if any, full shows from the 1960s, except some excerpts. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's because it was a common practice to re-record over the shows to save money for the tape.
So there was
hard to believe.
Yeah, so it was never saved. And so there's pictures, even from the first show. There's audio, which I find really interesting, of the first show, but just pictures. But everything really from the days in Burbank from 72 to 92 have been archived, and that's something that you convinced Johnny to do.
Well, when the show moved from New York to Burbank in 1972, they decided to put together an anniversary special, and that's when they realized they did not have all this material and that it had been destroyed. At first, they said it had been destroyed. It took us a long time to figure out that, no, it was actually reused. Nobody wanted to cop that, but it had been reused. So Johnny was powerful enough to say to NBC at that time, you know, I want to have possession of all this material. I want to make sure that nothing is destroyed from now on. And by the time I got there, I got involved in these anniversary specials, and that's when we needed to actually create a database and, you know, buy a computer. We bought a computer like with DOS 1.0 and a very primitive spreadsheet and started to build out this database, which actually we still use today. That's how we're able to find all these shows and see these shows, and it's a terrific thing. But he was just had the vision to say, let's protect this. He never expected it to be as successful as it was, but he definitely had some vision,
which is brilliant. I don't think people really know where they're stored. Tell people how and where these are stored.
They are all in a salt mine in Kansas, in Hutchinson, Kansas. And basically this mine, it was a huge mine that's used to mine salt that is that's sprayed over the roads in the winter. And after years and years of this mining operation, they had this basically a vault that is about the size of 250 football fields. It's 200 and some feet below the surface of the earth. It's flood proof. It's fireproof. It's the same humidity, it's the same temperature. And there had been a fire right next to the warehouse where our tapes were stored in LA, and the people from underground vaults and storage in Hutchinson came to us and said, you know, we have this facility and we'll make you a great deal. So not only was it great for us to be able to move it to Kansas for security, but when they did that, then they had to barcode everything. And when they barcoded everything, then I had a really good idea of what we had. So, I mean, there's probably 100,000 pieces of videotape in the vault. It's amazing.
Wow. And you have to take oxygen and stuff to go down there. I mean, this isn't something you just walk into underground.
Well, it's an operating mine. They're still mining. So if you go into a mine, you need to have a breathing device with you in case they, you know, cut into a vein of methane or something that's lethal. So it's, yeah, you have to wear a hard hat. It's a little hairy.
I'm sure it is. Well, you can catch all these great episodes that Jeff and his team have brought to Antenna TV every weeknight at 10, weeknights at 9 Central. You can also get The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, all kinds of collections, full episodes, a lot of content and much more at one of your websites.
JohnnyCarson.com. There you go. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And I will tell you, it was a pleasure meeting you. I'm thrilled and excited that Johnny was smart enough to put a guy like you in charge of his legacy. And you've done such a wonderful job with it. And thank you for sharing it with us, because now we can see it again every single night.
Thank you, Dave. My pleasure.